This program is presented by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hello, I'm Sarah Gregory, and today I'm talking with Catherine Marshall, an epidemiologist at CDC. We'll be discussing E. coli outbreaks in leafy greens in the United States and Canada from 2009 to 2018. Welcome, Catherine.
Hi, thanks. Glad to be here.
So, what is Shigatoxin E. coli? Don't people already have some sort of E. coli in their intestines?
They do. E. coli bacteria, they actually normally live in the intestines of people and also animals. So some people might be surprised to know that most E. coli are harmless, and they're actually an important part of a healthy gut. But Shigatoxin-producing E. coli, or STEC, is not harmless, at least for humans. So STEC are a type of E. coli that produce a toxin called the Shigatoxin, which was named after a Japanese scientist who discovered it. And STEC was first identified as a cause of outbreaks in 1982 when it caused a large outbreak linked to beef. So there are two main groups of STEC. There's first 0157, and then all of the other STEC are lumped together in a group called non-0157. They both cause a similar type of illness, but STEC 0157 is usually a bit more severe.
Just curious, I know that reptiles have a lot of salmonella in their intestines, as do backyard poultry. Backyard poultry and reptile pets or reptiles have E. coli in their intestines also?
Well, actually, STEC, they can live in the guts of animals, and it's really cattle primarily that they live in and other types of animals. And so because of that, it's funny, we actually see that beef is the most common source of STEC 0157 outbreaks, and that's because cattle are the primary reservoir for STEC.
I see. Okay. So what are the symptoms, and can it be deadly? I think it's deadly, right?
Yes. So STEC can cause diarrhea, which is sometimes bloody, and then some cramping and vomiting and fever sometimes as well. But the range of symptoms can really vary. So some people might experience a mild illness, but others might get so sick that they need to be hospitalized. And sadly, sometimes people do die from STEC infection. There's also a small proportion of people who are diagnosed with STEC infection that go on to develop a potentially life-threatening complication that's called hemolytic uremic syndrome, or HUS, and it's a condition that affects the kidneys.
So where do leafy greens fall in on the spectrum of STEC outbreaks? And tell us again what exactly STEC is.
So STEC stands for Shigatoxin-producing E. coli. And as we discuss in our paper, leafy greens are the second most common source of STEC 0157 outbreaks. Beef is the most common, and that makes sense because STEC lives in the guts of certain animals, primarily cattle. So it makes sense that we see beef is the most common source of STEC 0157 outbreaks. But leafy greens are often grown out in the open and exposed to the environment, so they can be vulnerable to contamination.
Okay, and what are considered leafy greens, and which one is the most common culprit?
So leafy greens can include different types of lettuce, like romaine and iceberg, but it also includes cabbage, spinach, kale, and there's other greens like chard, collard, and mustard greens, that sort of thing. So in our study, we found that among STEC outbreaks with a single type of leafy green that was identified as the outbreak source, that most were linked to romaine.
And why is this? Why would leafy greens be affected with E. coli? Obviously, they don't have it in their systems.
Right. So leafy greens can become contaminated with poop from cattle or other wild animals that could be carrying or spreading STEC bacteria, and they can do that directly or indirectly, so through contaminated irrigation water, for example, through flooding, runoff, or even dust. And so we don't know exactly why we saw romaine as the most common leafy green type here, but we have a few potential factors that could be contributing to this. So the first is the popularity of romaine. So one hypothesis we had was that romaine might just be more popular than other types of leafy greens. So we looked at some data around the popularity of romaine versus other types of lettuce and how that's changed over time. And we found that romaine and iceberg, maybe not surprisingly, are the most popular types of lettuce, but they're pretty similar. So we don't think this explains why we're seeing more STEC outbreaks linked to romaine versus other types. And the second factor that could be contributing is the shape of the lettuce. So if you picture a head of romaine lettuce, it's a little bit taller, the leaves are sort of loosely clumped together, and it's a bit more open at the top of the plant. So then if you picture iceberg, it's kind of more of this closed ball kind of shape. And so we wonder if the open shape of romaine could allow it to become contaminated more easily, and maybe that closed ball shape of iceberg helps protect it. But ultimately, we need more research to really understand what's happening here.
Is there a difference in these outbreaks between organic and non-organic?
That's a good question, but that's not something that we actually looked at in these outbreaks, unfortunately.
I'm always surprised when I see that there's an outbreak in an organic farm, but I guess maybe pesticides or not pesticides doesn't have much to do with poop spread. Are environmental investigations done at the time of the outbreak?
Ideally, they are, but an environmental investigation can only take place on a farm where the contaminated lettuce was grown, but only if investigators are able to determine where the contaminated lettuce came from. And that requires detailed information that's collected from interviews with sick people. That's what we call epidemiologic data. And detailed information that's collected from records that show how the contaminated lettuce moved through the supply chain. And that's traceback data. So many times, investigators aren't able to collect enough of that really important detailed information to be able to figure that out. But environmental investigations are important, and they can help give us clues about how lettuce became contaminated in the first place. So, for example, in one investigation in our study, investigators found the same strain of bacteria that made people sick in an irrigation canal that was close to romaine farms that were identified during traceback, and that was also near a cattle operation. So, you know, we don't know for sure that contaminated irrigation water caused the outbreak, but it's a pretty big clue.
Are these outbreaks seasonal?
Our data certainly suggests that most outbreaks tend to begin in the fall and the spring season, and then within those seasons, more outbreaks began in October and April than any other month.
Is there a reason for this that you've been able to identify?
We don't know. You know, we need more research to be able to understand this finding.
What about geographic location? Were these outbreaks mostly originate in one particular part of the country or countries?
Well, about 98% of the leafy greens that are grown in the United States come from just two states, and that's California and Arizona. So we often aren't able to figure out exactly where the contaminated leafy greens linked to outbreaks are from, but a few of them in this study were linked to growers in Arizona and California.
And how many outbreaks have there been over the decade you studied?
We found 40 STEC outbreaks that were linked to leafy greens in both the United States and in Canada. And we identified just about 1,200 ill people that were linked to these outbreaks. There were 420 people who were hospitalized, 77 people who developed HUS, and sadly, 8 people died. But the number of people who actually got sick in these outbreaks is likely much higher. These are just the ones that we know about. So, for example, if you ate food that was contaminated with STEC and you got sick, but you didn't go to your doctor, or you went to your doctor, but no testing was done, investigators wouldn't know about your illness.
What about age? Is there an age group more impacted than another?
So for leafy green outbreaks, people of all ages were linked to them. So that includes children less than one, all the way up to older adults. But most people were in their 20s. But some people can be more likely to develop HUS or experience more severe symptoms. And that includes people who have weakened immune systems or young children.
But most people were in their 20s. Is that what you just said?
Yes.
That's so surprising. Do they eat more lettuce? Or for some bizarre reason, more susceptible, do you think?
I think that it's probably that they just ate more lettuce.
Huh. What's the economic toll of all of this?
So in general, we estimate that there's about 265,000 STEC illnesses that occur each year in the United States and at a cost of about $280 million. But beyond the cost of illness itself, outbreaks can result in a lot of costs to companies that end up having to recall contaminated food. So the economic toll is not only impacting people who get sick and the healthcare system, but it impacts food companies as well.
What kinds of actions are taken when E. coli is found in a food source to warn the public? What happened? What's the chain of communication here?
So if investigators are able to identify the food source for an outbreak, there's a few different actions that they can take. And that includes actions to remove contaminated food from the marketplace and warning consumers. So FDA, or the Food and Drug Administration, will work with companies that produce contaminated food and recall it. And then CDC, FDA, and state and local health departments might all issue warnings to consumers, advising them to throw away the products and not eat the contaminated food. And they also might warn restaurants and retailers to not serve or sell the recalled food. And then for multi-state outbreaks, CDC will post announcements on their website and on social media and sometimes issue press releases as well to make sure the public is aware.
Are store chains pretty good about getting this stuff off the shelf, do you think?
So actually, FDA will work with retailers to ensure that product is recalled from the market.
Ah, good. That's comforting. How is the cause of the outbreak tracked down? What's the process? I mean, it seems like it must be extremely difficult.
Yes, investigating foodborne outbreaks is a complex and difficult job. There are five common steps in a foodborne outbreak investigation, some of which might happen at the same time. So the first step is to detect a possible outbreak. The second step is to define and find cases. The third step is to generate hypotheses about the likely sources. The fourth step is to gather traceback and laboratory data and then test that hypothesis. And then the fifth step is to take action and control the outbreak. So I can walk us through sort of each one of these steps. So the first step, to detect a possible outbreak, we do that using public health surveillance methods, including PulseNet, which is the National Molecular Subtyping Network, and it captures DNA fingerprints of the bacteria that's cultured from sick people. We also might learn of an outbreak through formal reports of illnesses or informal reports of illnesses. So in step two, defining and finding cases, that really helps us understand the size, the timing, severity, and even possible sources of an outbreak. And that's typically when we develop a case definition. That defines who's going to be included in the outbreak. And usually, again, that's based on that DNA fingerprint of the bacteria that people are infected with. So during hypothesis generation, investigators in a local or state health department will interview sick people to find out what foods they ate that week before they became sick. So that data that's reported by sick people is then analyzed to see if there's any foods that are being reported more frequently than we would expect, or if sick people are reporting eating at the same restaurants or shopping at the same grocery stores. So if investigators find something in common, they'll dig a bit deeper for more specific information, like brands, or to see if people ate the same food at the same restaurant. And all of this is what we call epidemiologic data. So once we have that hypothesis, investigators will gather some additional trace back and laboratory data to help see if there's a common point of contamination in the distribution chain. And so investigators and states and FDA will review records that are collected from restaurants and stores where sick people ate or shopped. And at the same time, investigators might also collect and test the suspect food from somebody's home, from a retail location, or where the food was produced. And if they find that same bacteria that caused illness in that suspect food or the production environment, that's called laboratory data. So investigators will assess all three of these types of data, epidemiologic, traceback, and laboratory, to identify and confirm a food as a source of the outbreak. And then during that last step, that's when public health officials might issue public warnings and companies might recall contaminated food to help stop the outbreak and prevent additional people from becoming sick. And throughout this whole process, we're in constant communication with other federal agencies and our state and local health partners to ensure there's a consistent flow of information so that we can work together to promptly identify a potential source and then take those important steps to protect the health of the public.
Thank goodness for public health. This is just amazing that all this complicatedness can be pulled together into figuring these things out. And there's so often more than one outbreak going on at a time. So
that's right.
Wow. So give us a brief summary of your study, the time frame you studied and how you went about it and who was involved, that sort of thing.
So for this study, we worked together with our colleagues and public health officials at the Public Health Agency of Canada and in the state of California, and worked with regulatory officials at FDA and the Canadian Food Inspection Agency. And we reviewed epidemiologic, laboratory, and traceback data from SPEC outbreaks that occurred in the United States and in Canada that were linked to leafy greens during 2009 to 2018. And to do that, we analyzed data from CDC's Foodborne Disease Outbreak Surveillance System for U.S. outbreaks, and we worked with our Canadian colleagues to identify outbreaks using their internal database for tracking outbreaks. So we found 40 outbreaks that were linked to leafy greens that resulted in 1,200 reports of ill people, 420 people hospitalized, 77 people who developed HUS, and sadly, 8 people who died. And what we found is that there were more outbreaks that were linked to romaine than any other type of lettuce, that more outbreaks began in the fall and the spring than any other seasons. And we also discussed some important barriers to gathering epidemiologic traceback and laboratory data. We also highlighted some of the changes that the leafy green industry has made in response to some of these recent outbreaks. But ultimately, more research will need to be done to evaluate how effective these changes are.
Are there any important gaps in what we know about these outbreaks, what causes them, and how quickly we can identify them?
Well, while technological advancements like whole genome sequencing are allowing us to learn more than ever before about these types of outbreaks, there's really still a lot that we need to learn. So while we found that more outbreaks began in the fall and the spring, we don't know exactly why that is or what's driving that. And we also don't know why we're seeing more outbreaks linked to romaine than other types of leafy greens. So more research around these findings could help us better understand why these outbreaks are happening and provide clues on what we can do to prevent them from happening in the first place.
So what kinds of improvements are needed to more quickly halt these outbreaks?
There are two categories of improvements that could be made. So improvement to address epidemiologic barriers and improvements to address traceback barriers. So one of the epidemiologic barriers that we discuss in our paper is the time that it takes to be notified of a possible outbreak and to begin an investigation. So by the time investigators try to identify a potential food source, sick people might not clearly remember what they ate before they got sick. And that can be 3 to 4 weeks in the past. And that delay occurs because it takes time for people to get sick and to seek medical care and for laboratories to complete testing and DNA fingerprinting. Another epidemiologic barrier is that leafy greens are widely consumed, and that makes it harder to show that they're the source of an outbreak and to pinpoint the exact leafy greens that made a person sick. So, I mean, as you can guess, leafy greens are eaten by many people. And in fact, about half of Americans report eating romaine lettuce in the past week. And furthermore, the people who eat leafy greens also typically eat various different types in a single week. So all of that combines to make it more difficult for investigators to find an association between leafy greens and illness, and then to determine which specific leafy greens are the cause of their illness. So to help overcome these epidemiologic barriers more quickly to identify the source of an outbreak, outbreak investigators should continue to use some successful strategies like using shopper cards and loyalty cards, which can provide more detailed information about foods people ate that they might not remember, and then also to continue to develop new strategies to solve outbreaks as quickly as possible to prevent additional illnesses. But improvement should really also address some of the traceback barriers that we highlight. And the first is the lack of complete and detailed records. So records of shipment lots are often missing really important details that are needed for traceback. So without the right type of information, investigators are unable to trace the contaminated product to its source. There's also challenges around identifying which leafy greens were grown on which farms. So because leafy greens from different farms are often mixed together throughout the distribution chain, such as when they're added to prepackaged bags, that can make it difficult for investigators to identify one specific lot or source. So to help overcome these traceback barriers and speed efforts to help stop outbreaks faster, the leafy green industry and retailers should keep complete and detailed records of transactions for each point along the farm-to-fork supply chain. To help with that, FDA has recently launched the new era of food safety, which is a new approach that's designed to leverage technology and other tools to help create a safer and more digital, traceable food system. And for leafy greens specifically, FDA has developed a 2020 Leafy Green Action Plan to help prevent and respond to leafy green outbreaks and address some of these knowledge gaps in leafy green safety.
We're in the midst of two big salmonella outbreaks right now. How are salmonella and E. coli outbreaks different?
Yes, we are. So there's the outbreak linked to onions and peaches, and these are two more examples of foodborne outbreaks linked to produce, but they are caused by a different germ, and that's salmonella. So salmonella infections are a bit more common than STEC infections. So we estimate there are about 1.35 million salmonella infections each year in the U.S., and that's compared to about 265,000 STEC infections. Most people who get ill from salmonella have diarrhea, fever, stomach cramps, many of the symptoms that are similar to STEC. But STEC infections are generally more severe. And what I mean by that is that the proportion of people who are hospitalized due to STEC is generally higher than for salmonella infections. But foodborne outbreaks that are caused by salmonella are still investigated the same way as outbreaks that are caused by STEC.
What do you think is the most significant public health aspect of your study?
Well, STEC outbreaks that are linked to leafy greens continue to occur. And in fact, the largest recent STEC outbreak in the U.S. was an outbreak that was linked to leafy greens in 2018. But a lot of people eat leafy greens, and they are an important part of a healthy diet. And since many leafy greens aren't cooked, and we usually eat them raw, we need to prevent them from becoming contaminated in the first place. So we still have work to do to make leafy greens safer to eat. Improving traceability of leafy greens could help us solve outbreaks faster and enable us to conduct those important environmental assessments to help us understand how and why outbreaks occurred. And understanding why romaine was linked to more outbreaks and why more outbreaks happen in the fall and spring could help us understand what causes these outbreaks and what we can do to prevent them. And we can all work together to improve the safety of leafy greens. But public health officials, the leafy green industry, retailers, and researchers all have an important role to play in this.
Okay, well, what can people do to protect themselves from getting E. coli from romaine and these other leafy greens? I love romaine, but frankly, I'm pretty much afraid to eat it anymore.
So even though we identified 40 outbreaks over a 10-year period, they're still relatively rare events. The U.S. food supply is one of the safest in the world, and millions of servings of leafy greens are eaten safely every day. Leafy greens are an important part of a healthy, balanced diet. But there are a few things that you can do to help reduce your risk of E. coli infection. So when you're buying leafy greens, choose leafy greens that aren't bruised or damaged. For leafy greens that are not labeled pre-washed, you should discard the outer leaves and then wash the remaining leafy greens under running water. And during an outbreak linked to leafy greens, consumers should follow the advice of health officials. And that might include throwing out a recalled product, not eating a specific type of leafy green, and cleaning all the surfaces in your kitchen that have been in contact with the contaminated leafy greens.
Okay. Tell us about your job at CDC and what you find most exciting about it.
So I'm an epidemiologist in the outbreak response and prevention branch, and I always wanted a career where I could help people, and I feel like public health gives me the opportunity to do that on a large scale. So for the past couple of years, I've been investigating multi-state outbreaks of Salmonella, S-Tec, and Listeria infections, and it's like being a detective. You're working on a really great team to put together pieces of a really complicated puzzle to try and solve the outbreak. But you get to see the results of your work right away, which is really rewarding. Now I work on preventing outbreaks and taking all of those lessons learned from outbreak investigations and then applying them to make changes to the food safety system. And when we're successful, we prevent illness, and I think that's exciting and rewarding.
What are you doing for fun and relaxation in these difficult pandemic times?
I like to hike and explore the city with my husband and our two dogs. And we've also always played a lot of board games, so we're doing that more these days. We've got a growing collection of games, and we've also learned to adapt and to play with friends over Zoom lately.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today, Catherine.
Thank you for having me.
And thanks for joining me out there. You can read the October 2020 article, Investigations of Sugatoxin-Producing E. coli Outbreaks Linked to Leafy Greens, United States and Canada, 2009 through 2018, online at cdc.gov/EID. I'm Sarah Gregory for Emerging Infectious Diseases.
For the most accurate health information, visit cdc.gov or call 1-800-CDC-INFO.